Growth is the only evidence of life. John Henry Newman. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, and Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank everyone for joining me this week. I appreciate the support. If you're a new listener, welcome. I hope you will listen and avail yourself of our backlog of episodes. And if you're a returning listener, well, again, thank you so much for all the continued support. I do want to apologize again for how rough last week's episode was. I hope my frustration didn't cause you frustration. This week's episode should be a lot smoother, I hope. And this week we will be covering kind of the rest of mainland Southeast Asia, most likely. And this means places that would today include modern-day Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam, and also kind of the very far southeast of China. Of course, much like last week, there may be some overlap between places we've already talked about, or will talk about, and this shouldn't be thought of to be a complete view of all humans, just an idea of human life based on recovered artifacts, archaeological sites, remains, that sort of thing. Before that, though, I did have some very interesting and informative feedback that is going to tie back in extremely well to this week's episode, but more on that later. But in the meantime, I would like to thank our listener, Ewan, for sending that to me. I do appreciate it very much. Now, much like the areas discussed last week, most of the people living in the area at the start of this season were probably descendants of people who had used the Halbanian type of tools. Of course, by the start of this season, a number of groups had refined and developed those tools further, specializing them to be suitable to their various regional and dietary lifestyles. Now, this process is not uniform. Some groups made changes earlier, and some did not need to change until much later. The dates for the next groups I'm going to mention are debated, but at the very start of this season, you have the Quinvan culture. They existed last season too, and their type site was found at, you guessed it, Quinvan. Now this is about 36 miles or 59 kilometers north of the city of the modern city of Vinh in Vietnam, and it's about 5 miles or 8 kilometers from the coast of the South China Sea. As you might expect, the people here were practicing hunting, gathering, and fishing. And I didn't find any explicit mention of farming or herding, but it's possible they did, at least to a supplemental level. And this site appears to have been abandoned shortly after this season starts. Now, unfortunately, couldn't really get too much detail on how their tools were that much different than the Halbanian. I'm assuming that it is more Neolithic in design. The blades are smaller. They have more microlithic tools, things like that. As well as, you know, they have a lot more types of tools related to fishing, as, again, fishing was a bigger part of their diet than just, say, a Halbanian group living in the mountains or in the hillsides inland in, say, along what is now the Vietnam-Laos border. So, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot I can really bring up about it. But I will say that the site, I think, was first discovered in the 30s. And some of this, I mean, it's all been re-evaluated since then. Vietnam has a fairly robust archaeological studies going on, at least compared to many of their neighbors. Another culture that is coming about during the course of this season is the Da But culture. Now, I'm not sure of the origin of this site's name, as there is not a Da But site. At least I didn't see it specifically mentioned. But it was found at Vinh Loc district, which is along the Nam Ma River. The dates for how long this culture lasts varies wildly, as do claims of their economy. Now, the site was first occupied around 5000 BC, but there is contention that their unique tools and material culture doesn't really develop until around 4000 BC or so. Prior to that, they were still using tools more closely to the Halbanian style than anything else. Now, some say the site lasts until around 3000 BC. Others say that it will continue to last until around 1000 BC. But all agree that the people there were primarily hunting, gathering, fishing. This would include, in addition to fishing, they were also harvesting shellfish. So there's been a lot of shell middens found in the area. And then eventually, some say they began to grow rice and herd animals as a supplement. However, more recent research has argued that they weren't domestically controlling these animals, that they were just taking more of their time to harvest wild strains or hunt wild strains of cousins of domesticated animals. Though, again, that's not 100% accepted. It is something that is debated. So instead of hunting, or instead of gathering more varieties of wild food, they're beginning to focus more on gathering wild varieties of rice and hunting wild pig and boar and things like that. And that's why you're getting kind of these false positives of these domesticated forms of food source. Now, if they aren't controlling domesticated sources of these varieties of things, then it means that they're probably, you know, moving in that direction. This might be a kind of a transitional phase, but again, all of this is debated. Now, this kind of leads into a debate that's been happening for quite a while in the region. And this is kind of a dual occupation type debate. It's kind of considered by some as evidence of groups, hunter-gatherers, being forced out by groups practicing agriculture or domesticated animals, things like that. Instead of it being like a slow transition, it's these groups are, you know, very quickly forced out by these better organized agriculturalists and domesticated herders. And that they're taking over these long-held sites by these various groups. And there are some that see that this is kind of evidence of multiple, kind of a precursor to multiple migration from various groups. Like we talked about last week, you will have both speakers of a Kra-Dai language, or the Proto-Kra-Dai language, and groups speaking a form of Austronesian. So you kind of have maybe kind of an early strain of this happening even at this early period. But that's heavily debated, and I don't know that it's kind of the scientific consensus anymore. And even at the time when it was first proposed, it was not widely accepted. Though this does give me a good chance to kind of go over some genetic studies, and this is what our listener had forwarded to me. And I had been looking at some of this stuff recently, but they actually linked to a newer article, one done within the last year, whereas what I was looking at was about 3 or 4 years ago. So again, I do appreciate that win. Now, this has to do with the relation of the Halbanian to other groups that we've talked about. Those like the Adamanese groups of kind of the north east of India and along kind of that southern coast of Myanmar, Burma, Thailand region. Now, I do want to stress that this type of genetic study can only be done based on DNA that has been found, so just keep in mind that this is done off a very limited number of testable DNA. I think they've only found really a handful of genetic evidence dating to this period that can accurately be tested and compared to other areas. So it appears that the Halbanian are, they are related to the Adamanese people. However, these groups are cousins. They are not directly related. The Halbanian are not descendants of an early Adamanese population, but they kind of, I guess what would have happened, at least if you look at a map, and again, maps aren't always 100% accurate, but at some point, the population that became the basis for the Halbanian culture descended from a common ancestor. They have, like, shared ancestry, I think, well, they don't know exactly, but I think it was around probably somewhere in the 40 to 28,000 years ago that they shared, like, a common ancestor or ancestry. And then, of course, you know, one group went on and the other group maybe remained where they were, or they just went different directions from where they initially sprang from. Now, the groups coming in from the north in the next, either at the very end of this season or kind of at the start of next season, these were groups kind of closely related to, I think, the term that geneticists use are Longlin or Guangxi, and also Southern East Asian is another term that you'll see sometimes. Now, they have common, obviously, common ancestry with the Halbanese and the Adamanese. However, this is much further back. They are, with the Halbanian and the Adamanese are first cousins, the Southern East Asian and the Longlin are less related. They are probably I guess they would be, hold on, I'm doing my math in my head about the ancestry here, but they would be probably the Longlin and they would probably be third or fourth cousins, I guess, if you could think of it that way. The Longlin and the Southern East Asian are more closely related to each other, but they're not as closely related as the Halbanian and the Adamanese are. Just kind of keep that in mind. And I'll try to remember to post that picture kind of the current consensus on their, I guess, their genetic lineages on my Twitter when I link this week's episode. Which, speaking of, if you guys are following me on Twitter, I haven't been posting links the last couple of weeks. I've just been way too busy at work and with IRL stuff. I just haven't had the time. I do apologize for that. But the last common ancestor for the, I think the last common ancestor of the Halbanian and the Adamanese is essentially a relative or like a brother or sister of the last common ancestor of the Southern East Asian and the Longlin / Guangxi cousins. So they're second or third cousins, technically speaking. Interestingly enough, the Jomon people of Japan are more closely related to the Longlin and Guangxi than they are to Southern or Northern East Asians. But that's all stuff that we'll get into later. So the Halbanian, the Andamese, they have the most recent common ancestry, but that's about as closely related as they are. Now, this may obviously change when we find more evidence. And I don't know that there's too much intermarriage in these later groups, at least not of any modern populations. I'm sure there have been individuals, you know, that have, you know, remarried or intermarried since then, but it's not a large population that has kind of equal parts to the Halbanian or Adamanese. And I'm not a geneticist, so I'm not doing the best job of explaining this, but that's kind of the simplest way I can kind of break that down. But again, I do want to thank Ewan for sending me that. It's helped me kind of wrap my head a little bit better to kind of kind of look at a map and see, you know, okay, where they broke apart isn't known. When they broke apart is a little bit better known. But that's just something to keep in mind. Now, I do want to move on to talk about what is now Laos and Cambodia. There are, of course, other groups in what is now Vietnam. Their findings on them aren't quite as well published because these subcultures of the Halbanian, again, there's a lot debated on them. And, you know, some people even question whether or not these groups should be recognized as individual cultures or if they're just regional variations. And that's all stuff that's decided, you know, kind of at the highest levels of academia in Southeast Asia, specifically Vietnam. Because as you probably realized, the names for all of these are Vietnamese because their studies done in Vietnam. There may be some overlap. The Quynh Van are pretty firmly in Vietnamese territory, whereas the Da Bút are a little bit closer to the Vietnamese Lao border, but they're still not that close. But I guess it's conceivable that at the very least that they, you know, may have had at least trade links with the groups living in what is now Laos. So just keep that in mind. Now, unfortunately, I don't have too much in terms of specific sites to discuss, just because, well, due to a number of reasons, Cambodia had a very brutal dictatorship until fairly recently. In memory, Laos has also had external and internal security issues. So there's not a huge level of archaeological research going on there that I'm aware of, and at least nothing that I've seen that's been published in English. Though, believe it or not, there is still, I think, work being done either in French or by people there who speak French and are using that to publish their works. Not because they can't publish in their local language, but that's how they would get attention from groups on the outside to maybe get better funding for their work. It is generally accepted, though, that Laos and Cambodia are also beginning to undergo this term, a Neolithic revolution, though again, we've talked in previous episodes how that may not be the best way to think about things, but there are groups that are beginning to make this slow transition from hunting and gathering as their primary source of food to more of a supplement. Now, there are still plenty of groups who are just using hunting and gathering. That's not going away. Even until the modern era, there are still groups that are going to do that. However, there were groups that were beginning to make that slow transition. Now you may ask, well, are they coming up with themselves, or are they just getting crops in from outside, or are other people moving in? Well, that's very much what I would like to know. Unfortunately, again, research on that is very hard to come by in English. But if you look at a map, you could see that there are a number of rivers flowing through both Cambodia and Laos that would be very easy, or at least not easy, but would be viable for the transportation of peoples, goods, and, you know, not just, you know, temporary transportation. We're talking about wholesale movements and migrations, specifically the Mekong River. This cuts through Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Vietnam. And it forms a border. Like, it's used as a lot of, you know, it's used as a solid border for all of these countries with each other. I think the Mekong forms the border with Myanmar and Laos. Laos has it form the border with Thailand and Vietnam and Cambodia use it to form their border. Laos and Thailand, Vietnam does not go that far inland there, but it is used to help form their border with Cambodia, at least in the south. It's not as clear with Vietnam because they are not touching it as far north as Laos and Vietnam do. The Vietnam only touches the Mekong River, kind of where it empties out into the ocean, is what I should say. It helps them form their border with, it doesn't. Sorry. It's a border for Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand, and Myanmar, and China. That's all I'll say. And also the Lan Kong, which is one of the primary tributaries of the Mekong. That helps form another part of Myanmar's border with China. So there's a lot of, that river has always been like a big form of traffic. But there are other rivers in those areas. In Laos, there's the O and the Ngun. Cambodia, there's the Tonle Sap, which is part river, part kind of large scale. I don't know if you call it a lake, but it's very wide. And, these are all regions that agriculture would have been very viable. And they would have not only viable, but very productive. And they would have definitely been, sources of migration if, say, your initial area was maybe overpopulated. You had to either, send part of your population away, or if, there were maybe trouble at home, or people just weren't used to living in large-scale societies like that just yet. And it may have been a way to alleviate pressure on your population by sending, a chunk of your population away to maybe somewhere that you could access via water. Now, it is easier to go downriver in the Mekong than it is upriver. So that also, plays into it. But you also, in North Vietnam and South China, you also have the Hong River. This would have also been a good place for the dissemination of crops and things like that. In addition, Vietnam, or not just Vietnam, but like most of kind of the central part of Southeast Asia, you have a lot of hills and areas where you could graze certain types of animals too. So all things to keep in mind. I wish I had more information in English, and sadly I'm monolingual, at least mostly. I have picked up a little bit of some stuff from reading about it, but unfortunately the Southeast Asian languages are not on that list. Unfortunately, I would like to learn more about them. They seem very, very interesting, but sadly, I haven't been able to dive into them too much. So, there are still plenty of hunter-gathering groups, but there are also groups that are beginning to practice agriculture or who have practiced agriculture and are just starting to make their way into the region. And that's by the end of this season. I think 4000 BC is kind of considered the start date for agriculture in Laos and Cambodia. Whereas in Vietnam, it's debated. I think it may have been a little bit earlier. Vietnam, where it meets what is now China, is less mountainous. It's very flat. You can go by river, but you could also make the journey by land. It wouldn't have been as easy as, say, sailing down the Hong or paddling down the Hong, as the case may have been, especially since the region was probably more forested. But it is easier to do, obviously, over flat land than over, say, mountains or hills. But how much easier? I can't say, obviously. but make of that what you will. That, I think, will cover us for mainland Southeast Asia. for this season, though. Again, I know this is kind of a sparser part of the season, especially after compared with India and the Middle East. It's just kind of, it is what it is, unfortunately. I hope more stuff will come out about these earlier periods. Now, I should point out that there is more archaeological work being done in places in the historical period in Cambodia and Laos. They are able to do that. But when you get back to this far in, it's, you know, typically some of these places, you know, they haven't been as well archaeologically documented. So it actually gives a good opportunity for people to go back and more systematically kind of examine things. Whereas other places, as we'll talk about when archaeological work was done, sometimes people were kind of rushing through to get to a specific layer, and they maybe weren't paying as much attention as they should have to some of the layers they were kind of burning through, Schliemann. But these are all things that we'll be talking about going forward. Now, I do want to move into East Asia next. And once we're done with East Asia, I think I'm going to continue and we'll kind of cut back to maritime Southeast Asia and then Australia. And then we'll kind of do Northern Asia and then start to move back west into Europe, and we'll cover that. And then we'll go to the Americas from there. So kind of a little haphazard at this point. But we might touch on some of this stuff again when we get back to maritime Southeast Asia, because I haven't talked about it too much. But people in Southeast Asia probably broke off from the Halbanian at some point and moved down there. But this was all done prior to the start of this season, and I think we've talked about that in prior seasons. So just keep that in mind. And then, of course, there are the Aboriginal peoples in Australia. They were, you know, of course, in Australia very early before, you know, even groups made it, other groups made it into Asia. So they're kind of their own population, fairly isolated. And we've talked about that before. But that stuff we'll be going into. So just keep all that in mind. But I do want to thank you all for joining me. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. I hope the audio quality and my frustration missing will make this a much more enjoyable episode. Thankfully, it doesn't seem like there were too many complaints last week. In fact, I didn't get any. I do want to thank you all for being understanding on that front. Yeah. So next week we will be... going up north, as it were. And we'll be talking about some of the people that I've mentioned in relation to genetics this week. And these are the peoples who will begin to be migrating south at the start of next season. So you'll kind of get a preview there. And it's a nice way to tie in Southeast Asia with East Asia. And, you know, this is one of those very interesting regions of the world, and I want to understand its history better, which is, again, part of the reason why I'm doing this show, is to help myself kind of contextualize history in general and broad, but in also specific terms. And, you know, we talked about, I think, in the first or second season, how this area has also been known as Indochina, which I think, you know, rather than a bland geographic name like Southeast Asia, I do think it kind of needs something a little bit more poetic, maybe. But also, I do think it kind of deserves something that separates it both from India and China, despite the fact that both India and Chinese civilizations have, you know, really impacted these places culturally. But, you know, these cultures, you know, they have integrated those outside influences in kind of into their own way of life. And they've developed their own unique senses of selves, for lack of a better term. So I would love to maybe hear some suggestions on that. If someone has has heard of a term, or, you know, something along those lines. Of course, because the area is so diverse, I don't think a term that would satisfy, you know, all those different peoples would ever kind of come about. But, you know, we'll see. You never know. Maybe someone will invent something for that, or, you know, come up with it in a kind of a pop cultural sense, and maybe it'll catch on. Who can say? But, yeah. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, constructive criticism, please let me know. You can contact me via direct message on Twitter /X. You can comment on the YouTube video itself. You can send me an email at waradrevpod@gmail.com. And I would be more than happy to respond as soon as I can. I thank you all for joining me again. I hope you have a good rest of your day and week from whenever you're listening to this. Thank you. Peace.